Book of Job begins with the friends sitting in silence, and the narrative part of it really finishes likewise with them in silence before Job. And I think one take from the Book of Job is that all this endless argument was to no avail. It did not really get anywhere. In fact, it made things worse, and the sound of silence would have been far greater than all the verbiage that comes through. And that would have come over very clearly when this was acted out, as it were, as a play for voices, which in my opinion is the genre of the whole book. Well, Elihu then pops up in Job 32, verse 18. He says, "I'm full of words. The spirit within me constrains me." And we wonder what to make of Elihu, because he does misquote Job. He does harshly judge Job in a way that's out of step with how God does. And yet, in another sense, there's a lot of things he says that might apparently be true. I would say that he is a literary device to summarize the arguments of the friends at the end of the book, because most people who've engaged with the Bible have not been literate. And so all these things that they were hearing, the arguments of the friends, I mean, it's a fairly detailed sort of complex dialogue that goes on. And by the time you get to the end of it, when the friends stop speaking, you sort of would have forgotten what they actually said. People didn't have the text on their smartphone to just flick back over and have a look at. And so Elihu serves as a literary device, I think, to summarize what they're saying. And he's bursting to speak in verse 18 of Job 32. "I'm full of words. The spirit within me constrains me. I've got to vent," he says, verse 19. "My breast is as wine which has no vent. Like new wineskins, it's ready to burst." Well, Zophar says exactly the same in Job 20. Job, likewise, Job 13, he says that he has to speak. And yet the book ends with all of them in humbled silence. And the overall takeaway from it all is, although you feel you just must say something, actually you don't. And often it is better to be silent. And this, of course, was, I think, the whole message, really, that we're to take away. And how many times have we felt, look, I must just say something, you know, just at the end of the discussion, I must just say, no. You there is no must about it. You need to. You feel you need to, when self-restraint would have been better. He says in verse 20, "I will speak that I may be refreshed." In other words, he's not actually speaking in order to help anyone, although he says he is. He's speaking for his own benefit. "I must speak that I may be refreshed." Well, he would have been better, I think, to have remained silent. And you think of the Lord Jesus. His self-control when he was on trial for his life was such that Pilate marvelled. All the accusations thrown at him, and his self-control was absolutely amazing. Pilate marvelled. He'd never seen somebody under such continual, obvious false accusation who could remain so silent and so self-controlled. And so it is a lesson to us that so often when you feel, I must just say this, yeah, you want to say it. You kid yourself in the hot blood of the moment that no, this is actually for the benefit of other people, but it is actually for your benefit. As he says in verse 20, "Elihu, I will speak that I may be refreshed." I've got this bubbling up inside me. I've just got to let it out. No. Zophar says this, Job says this, and they needn't have said that. Job at the end lays his hand upon his mouth. He recognizes that he has spoken that which he ought not to have spoken. And in the end, I think especially the force of this as a radio, well, not a radio play, but as a play for voices, like a radio play maybe in 20th century terms, I think one of the ideas is that silence would have been better. And maybe the book started after the prologue with a lengthy period of silence, and perhaps there was likewise a lengthy period of silence after Job finishes his last speech and the friends don't answer. And then Elihu starts speaking, and I guess the audience is intended to sort of roll their eyes and groan. I think, oh, what's going on? The whole thing is continuing on and on and on. Oh, have we got to put up with any more of this? And then, of course, God speaks. And I do suggest that so often silence is far better than words. And we read in James about controlling the tongue and taming the tongue. And the whole nature of the metaphor and the idiom there is not so much that, well, make your tongue say the right thing. It is rather just curb it. Don't say it. It's not always the question of, well, what should I say that's wise? You think of Jesus, as I say, on trial for his life, he was silent. He didn't go off, as he could have done, into a whole load of self-justification and language and words. He was silent, and Pilate marvelled. And Paul, I think, perceived that when he says that the Lord Jesus, before Pontius Pilate, witnessed a good confession. Well, what was his good confession before Pilate? Most of the time before Pilate, he was silent, and Pilate marvelled. And yet Paul says he made a good confession. You say what you have to say, and the good confession is often silence. That is the control of the tongue.